I've got this one. So, yeah. Well, the few, the faithful, right? Turn in your Bibles, please, to 2 Samuel chapter 17. And before we endeavor to take a look at this chapter, just to sort of put things in context, we go back to chapter 15. I'd like to just read one verse. David is fleeing Jerusalem. Absalom is in rebellion, trying to take over the throne. And David said in verse 31 of chapter 15, "O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." And last week, we looked at chapter 16. Last Wednesday night, we looked at chapter 16. And we saw the beginning of God's answer to that prayer of David to turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. We noted last week in chapter 16 that Ziba, who had been put in charge of taking care of Mephibosheth, had deceived David. He lied to him. He said that Mephibosheth was trying to take over the kingdom, which was just a lie. We noted that he was not only deceived by Ziba, he was cursed by Shimei, and he was befriended by Hushai, David's friend. And the chapter closed with Absalom seeking the counsel of Ahithophel. And that counsel begins at the end of chapter 16, and it continues into chapter 17. We noted at the end of chapter 16 what Ahithophel advised Absalom to do was to take his father's concubines, which was a real affront to David. The concubines belonged to the king. There had been 10 concubines left behind in Jerusalem. And Ahithophel, who had it out for David, and of course we know that that was rooted in the fact that Ahithophel was Bathsheba's grandfather, and he was not quite happy with the fact that David had basically raped his granddaughter and then killed her husband. And so he defected from being a servant of David. Now he's a servant of Absalom. And so clearly he had been hurt by David, and his response was to try to hurt David back. Okay? And so the first thing he said was to go in unto the concubines, which was a real, as it were, a slap in David's face, an affront to David, essentially claiming to take the kingship to himself, and to guarantee that there would be no way that David and his son Absalom would ever be reconciled. So that was the beginning of the counsel that Ahithophel gave to Absalom. And Ahithophel was highly regarded as a counselor, both by David and by Absalom. In fact, it says of him, at the very end of chapter 16, it says, "The counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God, so was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom." So Ahithophel was quite a highly regarded counselor. And his counsel to Absalom, which was rooted in vengeance against David, was to take his father's concubines. But that was only part of his counsel. I know we have a chapter break, but we recognize, of course, that these chapter breaks are not inspired. They are man-made. And the counsel continues into chapter 17, the first part of it anyway. So let's read chapter 17 and see what we can come up with. Verse 1, "Moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee. And I will smite the king only, and I will bring back all the people unto thee. The man whom thou seekest is as if all returned. So all the people shall be in peace. And the saying pleased Absalom well, and all the elders of Israel. Then said Absalom, call now Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear likewise what he saith. And when Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spoke unto him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken after this manner. What shall we do after his saying? If not, speak thou. And Hushai said unto Absalom, The counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men, and they be chafed in their minds, as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field. And thy father is a man of war, and will not lodge with the people. Behold, he is hid now in some pit or in some other place. And it will come to pass, when some of them be overthrown at the first, that whosoever heareth it will say, there is a slaughter among the people that follow Absalom. And he also that is valiant, whose heart is as the heart of a lion, shall utterly melt. For all Israel knoweth that thy father is a mighty man, and they which be with him are valiant men. Therefore, I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee from Dan even unto Beersheba, as the sand that is by the sea from multitude, and that thou go to battle in thine own person. So shall we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falls on the ground. And of him and of all the men that are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he be gotten into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to that city, and we will draw it into the river until there be not one small stone found there. And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, thy counsel, the counsel of Hushai the Archite, is better than the counsel of Ahithophel, for the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel, to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Then said Hushai unto Zadok and to Abiathar the priests, thus and thus did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus have I counseled. Now therefore send quickly, and tell David, saying, lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up and all the people that are with him. And Jonathan and Ahimaaz stayed by in Rogel, for they might not be seen to come into the city. And a wench, or a maidservant, went and told them, and they went and told King David. Nevertheless, a lad saw them and told Absalom. But they went both of them away quickly and came to a man's house in Bahurim, which had a well in his court, whither they went down. And the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and spread ground corn thereon, and the thing was not known. And when Absalom's servants came to the woman to the house, they said, where is Ahimaaz and Jonathan? And the woman said unto them, they be gone over the brook of water. And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. And it came to pass, after they were departed, that they came up out of the well, and went and told King David, and said unto David, arise and pass quickly over the water, for thus hath Ahithophel counseled against you. Then David arose, and all the people that were with him, and they passed over Jordan by the morning light. There lacked not one of them that was not gone over Jordan. And when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his ass and arose and got him home to his house, to his city, and put his household in order, and hanged himself and died, and was buried in the sepulcher of his father. Then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab, which Amasa was a man's son whose name was Ithra, an Israelite, that went in to Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister to Zeruiah, Joab's mother. So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. And it came to pass, when David was come to Mahanaim, that Shobai, the son of Nahash of Rabbah, of the children of Ammon, and Maker, the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite, of Rogalim brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him to eat. For they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. And so, Ahithophel's counsel continues. Beyond his recommendation that he go in under the concubines of his father David, upon the very rooftop, ironically, upon the very rooftop where David's sin began with Bathsheba. He saw her when he was on that same rooftop and lusted after her and took her and basically raped her and then ended up committing murder to try to conceal it. So the council continues. And as we look at chapter 17, there's one verse I want to emphasize, and it's right in the middle of the chapter, and it's really key to understanding the whole chapter. And I want us to keep that in the forefront of our minds as we look at this chapter together tonight. And it's what we read in verse 14. The last part of the verse says this: For the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. That's the key to understanding this chapter, is to understand that God, as always, is behind the scenes, controlling the scenes that he's behind. And that verse makes it clear that God was orchestrating everything that we read in this chapter. The Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel. It was according to God's eternal purposes and his plans that the counsel of Ahithophel would be defeated to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. So I want you to sort of keep that in your mind as we look at the events of this chapter. So it starts out with Ahithophel's advice on how Absalom might put an end to his father, how they might kill David. And so what does he say? He has a plan where 12,000 men are chosen and they pursue after David this night. There was urgency to it right then and there. Notice the end of verse 1. This night, we need to act. The time is now. We need to get on with this plan. I need 12,000 men to go after David and come upon him when he's weary and weak and he'll be fearful and the people will flee and I'll smite the king only. We can get the job done, eliminate the threat to you taking the throne, and we can do it by killing only David. Okay, all the men will flee, but we've got to act now. Now's the time, while David is weary and his men are tired. And I will bring back all the people unto thee, he says, and the one whom thou seekest is as if all return, so all the people shall be in peace. So that's the plan. Now, this plan was suggested by a man that was highly, highly regarded as a counselor. In fact, too highly regarded, because what we read about him was that his words were considered on a par with the very word of God himself, which is, of course, not true. But that's to help you understand just how highly regarded this man was as a counselor. And so he comes up with this plan. And so normally, you know, you would hear the plan, and in verse 4 it says, the saying pleased Absalom well and all the elders of Israel. Now, if that's all I had read and I didn't know the rest of the chapter and the rest of the story, I would assume that, okay, you've got the most trusted advisor on earth. I mean, you You regard what he says as if it were coming from God himself. And he has suggested a plan. The plan makes sense. We can take David. We do it tonight. I would have thought that they would have said, okay, let's get on with it. Let's do it. Sounds good to me. And it that's essentially what they said. And then Absalom has a second thought. I mean, I would not expect to read that. I would have thought, well, okay, you suggested a plan. Sounds good to me. You're a wise man. You're the greatest counselor on earth. Why don't we just do your plan? Problem solved. But it didn't work that way. Instead, in verse 5, Absalom says, call Hushai the Archite and let's hear what he has to say. This is David's friend that went undercover as a spy to act on David's behalf. So if we slow down as we read our Bibles and ask ourselves the question, what's going on here? Why didn't Absalom just act upon Ahithophel's plan and take care of David that very night? Well, that's a good question. But if we think about Absalom and consider what we know about Absalom, I think we can understand why Absalom wanted a second opinion, okay, from Hushai. So what do we know about Absalom? Well, most notably, he wanted the throne so badly he was willing to kill his own father. He'd already killed one of his brothers, Amnon, who had raped his half-sister Tamar and had been in exile for a few years, came back. He was a good-looking guy. It says back in chapter 14 concerning Absalom, it says, but in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. I mean, he was the best-looking guy in the land. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And apparently, he goes on to say in the next verse how he pulled his hair once a year and cut his hair and they weighed it. He was obsessed with his hairdo, okay? Highly overrated, don't you think, Jerry? What do you think? Highly overrated. So here's this guy. And if as you read on, when he came back to Jerusalem, we read about how he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And he got them a fancy chariot. That'd be like a Lamborghini or something today. And he got a bunch of men to accompany him so that everywhere he went, it looked as if people were flocking to him. So here's a guy who's super good looking. All the women swooned over him. He had all this hair that he was so proud of. He was willing to kill his own father to ascend the throne. He was winsome. He stole the hearts of the men of Israel. All of this was designed so that he would be the king. Now that's Absalom. That's the man we're talking about. Absalom is all about Absalom and furthering my cause. So let's look again a little closer at this plan of Ahithophel. Because see, if you read your Bible too fast, you won't notice this. But let's look again. So keep that in mind about Absalom. And so here's what Ahithophel says. Let me now choose out 12,000 men. Let me make the choice of who to go after David. And I will arise and pursue after David this night. And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak and will make him afraid and all the people that are with him shall flee. And I will smite the king only. And I will bring back all the people unto thee. And everything will be happily ever after. You just go home and watch a movie or something and just turn it over to the sure man, okay? I can handle this. I'll choose the men. I'll do this. I'll do that. I'll take care of the problem. How do you think that sat with Absalom? Based on what we know about him and his ego. I think that didn't sit too well with Absalom, because he's not front and center anymore in this plan, okay? He's way in the background. You know, it's Ahithophel that's making the decision and leading the charge and getting the job done. So maybe it's a little easier to understand why Absalom said, well, you know, maybe we ought to get a second opinion here. So call Hushai. Now, keep in mind, Hushai is David's friend. And Hushai is all about buying time to give David a chance to escape. Okay? I mean, let me tell you what. There's a lot at stake here. I mean, this has everything to do with God's eternal plans and purposes, and one day raising up a Messiah who would be the son of David. David can't be getting killed here. God is at work. And remember, that was why we read that verse, saying that really all of this was under the sovereign control of God. So Hushai comes along, and he says, and so they say to him, and I don't know where Ahithophel was. He may have left. We don't know. He's not mentioned again. He's not in this immediate context. Maybe he's there, but he has no speaking part. So Hushai, they seek Hushai, and they say, what have you got to say about this? And so they share with Hushai Ahithophel's plan. And they say, shall we do what he says? And if not, tell us. That's verse 6. And Hushai said to Absalom, the counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. Now, Hushai was a pretty smart character. He knew what he was doing. He didn't just condemn Ahithophel, because he was well known as a counselor. He puts it in these terms. He says, you know, this time, I mean, he's usually right, but this time he's off a little. I think I've got a better plan. Now, keep in mind, what he's trying to do is buy time so David can escape. Okay? David is in a world of trouble. As a matter of fact, God's comment about Ahithophel, he calls it it's good counsel. Not morally good, but if your objective is to kill David, Ahithophel had a pretty doggone good plan, okay? So anyway, so Hushai says, well, you know, this time, the advice that Ahithophel has given is not so good. And then he goes on and he says to Absalom, he says, you know your father, how he's a mighty warrior. He's a valiant warrior. And he's got all those mighty men that have done all these wonderful, valiant acts. And if you go after them, you've got to expect to confront someone that's going to be like a bear whose cubs you just tried to steal. It's not going to be easy, okay? Your father's a man of war, and it's not that you're going to just walk into the camp and there's going to be a big sign, a big banner, you know, David sleeps here. No, he's too smart for that. He's going to be hidden somewhere. It's not going to be so easy as Ahithophel has suggested to go and find David and kill him, like Ahithophel's plan. This is Hushai's talking. He's not going to lodge with the people. He's going to be in some pit or some other place and so forth. And then if you attempt to go after David and you fail, and word gets out that Absalom went after David but was unsuccessful, you're going to be in a real bunch of trouble. You know, this is not going to sit well in terms of your effort to ascend the throne. So he's reasoning with them, okay? And again, he keeps repeating this, is, look, all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and those that are with him are valiant men. And so he offers an alternate plan. And his plan comes in verse 11. So he shoots down Ahithophel's plan and suggests his own plan. He says, "Therefore, I counsel that all Israel," not 12,000 men, "all Israel be generally gathered unto thee from Dan to Beersheba as the sand that is by the sea from multitude, and that thou go to battle in thine own person." In other words, don't take 12,000 men. Get the whole nation. Get soldiers from Dan to Beersheba, and you lead them in battle. You be the man in charge. You get the victory. You know, not Ahithophel. You lead the people, and you get the victory. And he goes on, and he uses all this poetic language that no doubt appealed to Absalom. He says, "Look, we'll come upon him in some place, and we'll light upon him as the dew falls on the ground." You know, this is going to be a sure thing. And of all the men that are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. We'll kill them all. We'll kill them all. David and all of his men. Not just the king, but we'll kill them all. Okay? In fact, if he tries to retreat to a city, verse 13, we'll bring ropes and we'll essentially do a dragnet, and we'll draw him out under the river so that there wouldn't be one single stone, one small stone unturned. We'll get him. We'll get him. And you'll be the man in charge. And Absalom said, and all the men of Israel said, "The counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel." That was the determination that Absalom made. "Hushai, I like your plan." See, he has an integral part in that plan, right? Now, it's not all about Ahithophel. Now it's about him, right? And so, "The counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel, for the Lord had appointed," and this is the verse, "the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel." In other words, Ahithophel's plan was a better plan. It stood a lot better chance of killing David. It wasn't good, again, it wasn't good morally, but if killing David is your objective, Ahithophel's plan was a lot better. Let's go tonight while they're tired, while they're weary, and let's take just the king. And it says, "to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom." So that is what's so amazing. And as we look at the rest of the verses, and we see all these details, it's just a reminder that, we know this, we know it maybe more academically than we do in real life, but you know, the God of the universe, the one who put the stars in space, he meddles in the affairs of men. Do you believe that? He meddles in the affairs of men. This is exactly what's going on. Listen, God's entire redemptive program is in the balances here. David gets killed, it's kaput. David's got to survive this. And every detail that we read about, we're going to look at them here in a minute, is all part of God's sovereign plan. That's an amazing thing. So, Absalom says, "Yeah, I like your plan better. I like Hushai's plan better than Ahithophel's plan." Now, keep in mind that time is of the essence as far as Ahithophel's plan. You know, this all happened in the same day, as far as we can tell. The incident on the rooftop, David fleeing, he's still on that side of the Jordan, he hadn't crossed over. His life would definitely be in jeopardy if Ahithophel's plan was implemented. And Hushai gives plan B, and Hushai doesn't know at this point which plan Absalom is going to go with. So let's see what happens. "Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar," verse 15, these are the priests, and he explains to them, his plan and Hushai's plan and Ahithophel's plan. And then he says in verse 16, "Now therefore send quickly." See, he doesn't know what Absalom's going to do. "Send quickly and tell David." See, that was the deal. When Hushai came to David, David said, "Look, I appreciate your support, but you can be of a lot more value if you infiltrate the ranks and go back to Jerusalem, keep your ear to the ground, find out what Absalom's up to, and keep me informed." So Hushai became a spy. And the deal was, whatever Hushai learned, he would share that with the priests, Zadok and Abiathar, who would in turn share it with their two sons, who would somehow get the word to David. That was the plan. And so Hushai doesn't exactly at this point know what Absalom is going to do. Okay, so he says, "Send quickly." We don't know, because if they go with Ahithophel's plan, it's going to happen tonight. We got to get on with this. "Send quickly and tell David, say, lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness." In other words, don't stay where you are, because they may be coming after you tonight. "But speedily," notice that, "send quickly and speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up and all the people that are with him." Now, Jonathan and Ahimaaz, these are the sons of the priest, stayed at En-Rogel, for they might not be seen to come into the city. And a maidservant went and told them. They went and told King David. So the idea is this. Hushai, you find out what's going on. You tell the priests, and the priest's sons will get word to David. Well, the problem was the priest's sons stayed outside the city, and it was too dangerous to be seen going back into the city to get word from Hushai or from their fathers, the priest, and then take it to David. It was too dangerous. So how is Hushai going to get word to David? Well, he tells his sons, and then his sons told an unnamed maidservant. And she's the one that took the word. It says a maidservant went and told them, and they went and told King David. So the two sons get the word. They get the word, and they went and told David. But the intermediary, the one that really made it all happen, was this unnamed maidservant. Now that's amazing. God worked all that out. I mean, well, and so let's see what happens. There's a little glitch here in verse 18. A lad, it says, saw them and told Absalom. But they went, both of them, away quickly and came to a man's house in Bahurim, which had a well in his court, where they went down. And the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth. We read all that. So what happens? So how are they going to... So Hushai has the information. He tells the priest. The priests have to get it to their son. The sons can't come back into Jerusalem. So a maidservant gets word to the sons, and the sons get word to David that he needs to get out of Dodge, because as far as Hushai knows, they're coming after him tonight, and his safety depends on it. And so they come upon this farmer and his wife from Bahurim, and that's where Shimei was from, the one that cursed David. But David obviously had some supporters in that same town. And so what we have here is this farmer and his wife had a well, and they provided a place for the sons of the priests to hide while Absalom's men came looking for him. So they put him down in a well. Probably it was dry that time of year. We don't know. And she was pretty smart. She covered it and put some grain there and just, you know, concealed the whole thing. The men came and they left. Never knew that the sons of the priests were down in that well. So, I mean, you think about it. So how's God's eternal plan of redemption coming along? What's the state? I mean, at this moment in time, on this particular day in history, this really happened now. I mean, this is fun. This blows my mind to think about this. Well, it all hinges upon this little maidservant. We don't know her name. But, you know, if she hadn't gotten word, David would have never known, and they would have possibly ended his life that day, thwarting God's eternal plans and purposes for a redeemer being the son of David. It all hinged on that little lady. Or did it hinge upon the farmer and his wife? Yes and yes. This is amazing. And you know, does God meddle in the affairs of men? Yeah. Does he want to meddle in our lives? Yeah. Does he ultimately work all things after the counsel of his own will? Well, yeah. Do we have a free will in decisions to make? We don't have to serve him. We don't have to be faithful to him. We don't have to do a lot of things. But if we really believe that the eyes of the Lord are looking to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in behalf of those whose hearts are whole, perfect, complete, wholehearted towards him, God is working even in these little details. And so in a sense, you could say, I think about that, this little maidservant, you know, I'd like to whisper in her ear and say, you know what you just did was so important that the plan of God from eternity past to bring a Messiah into the world, his son, depended on what you did tonight. That's a true statement. Same thing can be said of the farmer's wife who hid them. So anyway, I got to move on. Okay. So they couldn't find them. And so they went looking and they basically gave up. And so we come to verse 23. And I've got an important point to make in connection with Ahithophel. Now, we already know that Ahithophel is a counterpart, the Old Testament counterpart of who? Judas. Now, that's not my opinion. I mean, the Lord said that. I mean, what David wrote about Ahithophel, the Lord Jesus took David's words and applied them to Judas Iscariot. They were both traitors. They both hanged themselves. And now that's what we read. So when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, now see, he wasn't used to that. When he saw his counsel was not followed, he sat on his ass, rose, went home, went to a city, put his house in order, and hanged himself and died and was buried. He committed suicide. Now, you got to ask, why did he do that? Why did he do that? Well, you know, you might say, sort of reason humanly, put yourself in a situation, and say, well, you know, if David had been successful, if David survived and regained the kingship, then he was going to be in a heap of trouble. He would have been rightly branded, as a conspirator. And what would they have done to him? They would have killed him, right? But if Hushai's plan had worked and his plan had been rejected, then Hushai would be the one that would be the prominent one that the king would listen to now. So either way you have it, things didn't look too good for Ahithophel. And this was a man who was highly regarded. He, you know, you could say, well, maybe he committed suicide because it was just too much for him to bear, the fact that his counsel was rejected and he was embarrassed, he was humiliated, he had lost face, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All that may be true and well and good, but there's more to it than that. In the big scheme of things, what's going on is this. What's going on is this. You got to go back and recall what it was that motivated Ahithophel to jump ship. What was it that was the prime motivating factor that caused Ahithophel to defect from being David's trusted counselor to Absalom's trusted counselor? What was it? It was Bathsheba, exactly. It was what David had done to Bathsheba. And Ahithophel couldn't stand the fact that David had been forgiven. And even more, that God was going to use this man who had raped his granddaughter. Put yourself in that place. I mean, I've got a certain amount of sympathy for Ahithophel. I can understand why he did what he did. He jumped ship. He couldn't bear the fact that God had forgiven David, and not only forgiven David, but was going to use David in a mighty way in accomplishing his eternal plan of redemption. It's a whole lot like Luke 15 and the prodigal son. The older brother, the prodigal son is not about the prodigal son, it's about the older brother that pictures the Pharisees. The older brother couldn't stand the fact that the father forgave the prodigal son. He hated that fact that he forgave him. And so we've got a similar situation here. So here's Ahithophel, and you see, what's really going on here is that Ahithophel, because he could not accept the grace of God that God showed to David, because he couldn't accept that, he found himself on the wrong side of God. David was the man of God's own choosing. God had made a promise to David back in chapter 7 that his son would reign forever and ever and ever. There would be no end to his kingdom and to his throne. And God had made that promise. And God is going to keep that promise, just like the promise of the Lord Jesus. The gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And Ahithophel found himself on the wrong side of the man of God's choosing to accomplish his eternal plans and purposes. That's what's really going on here. Is that my time to quit? It is time to quit. I'll try to. Anyway, that's what I want us to see, because, you know, we have to guard in our own lives, we have to guard against anything that would cause us to defect from our faithfulness to the Lord Jesus. And sometimes human interactions can, I mean, I talked to a guy not long ago, met this guy up in Virginia, bought something on Marketplace and went up and met the guy, and he was telling me his story. Yeah, he used to go to church and hadn't gone in 5 or 6 years because he had fallen out with somebody at church. We got to guard against that kind of thing. We find ourselves on the wrong side of God's will for our life if we let these sorts of things, like what happened with Ahithophel. I mean, it's understandable, but it was wrong. He should have never done it. But God overruled. God overruled, because that's the kind of God that we have. He's an amazing God, and he does meddle in the affairs of men. And so everything we read, and I didn't read the last few verses, but it's just a record of the ones that came to David's aid. And let me just finish by saying this. I want you to look at the last sentence in the chapter. So what happens? David gets word, and he gets across the Jordan, and he makes his way to safety, all because of the farmer and his wife and the maid and the fact that the counsel of Ahithophel wasn't made foolishness. It was made to appear as foolishness. It was good counsel. God said it was good counsel, as far as if that's your goal, but God overruled in it. And Ahithophel's reason for going after David that night, we got to get in a hurry and get it done tonight, was because he would catch them weary. And let's look at the last sentence in the chapter. What do we read? And it says, "For they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness." Ahithophel was right, but David was safe. David was safe. And it's all because of a sovereign God who orchestrates and works and meddles in our lives. And you and I can be that little maidservant, or you and I can be the messengers, and we might think it insignificant, but God can use even us in mighty ways if we'll be willing.